Summer adventures are better with Minky Couture. From road trips to ball games, beach nights to backyard movies, Minky has you covered. Don't miss the Everywhere blanket. Water-resistant, ultra-soft, and made for life on the go. Wherever summer takes you, bring comfort along. MinkyCouture.com, the original best blanket ever.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Grey Malkin Lane Patreon channel, where I get to join with friends talking about oft-overlooked characters that deserve some second thought. Sometimes they don't, and this is not a character you ever wanted to learn about, but we're going to talk about Master Man and Warrior Woman today. I'm not even putting Master Man on the billing. We're just going to call this the Warrior Woman episode, but it is about both of them. Now, the theme on my show in November has been the ideas of fascism in pop culture. These ideas have been building in my brain for this show for a long time. It's kind of a heavy topic, but we've been doing these little Red Skull mini conversations for those of you that listen to the show. They've been really healing. I initially had thoughts of doing this themed month back when we covered the Secret Empire in the Watergate story in Captain America that involved the X-Men, but this is the right time for this conversation. So all of the Patreons and all of the episodes this month are circling around concepts that come from painful places in history, but that have made transformative impact on all of our fiction that we've been reading and consuming our entire lives. So it's almost jarring to realize how deep these roots run. So today we're going to talk about Master Man and Warrior Woman. These are the Übermensch. These are the German super agents, the equivalent of Captain America, but for the Germans. And boy, are there some stories to be told. So I'm very excited to welcome my dear friends Theodate Chase and Priya Saxena with me today. It's lovely to have you both back here. Let me have you both introduce yourselves with your name and pronouns. Let me hear your initial thoughts when I invited you to join me for the Super Nazis episode.
Hello. Oh, yeah. No, I, well, for one thing, I knew when you asked me for this, it meant I was going to have to read New Invaders again, which I was not exactly thrilled about. But this can be a real challenge because you really have to read into these characters as being actual characters and not just like Nazis. And it's like, well, I guess I gotta give Master Man and Warrior Woman some thought now.
And then your pronouns, she, her.
She, her, yes.
Yes. And I know you're always down to go to the Invaders realm, but that sometimes means the Invaders stories you don't like to.
I'm Priya. I use she, her. Yeah, the last episode I did was Victoria Hand, and I was gonna say that was very different, but like, it's kind of, there are some similarities actually, I think, with Warrior Woman. When Chad like sent me the email of the characters, I had never heard of them. And I think I like Googled Warrior Woman and I was like, oh, she hates men. This is great. And then I like open up her issue on Marvel Unlimited and I'm like, oh, she's a Nazi. I see.
And boy, so, is she. Let's talk about her costume in a minute.
It was kind of an adventure. But I do have like such a fondness for 70s Marvel comics. So it was also kind of fun to dig into this.
Okay, we got to open up on, again, and this is, we're gonna be touching on things that are real from history that have been impacting our fiction forever and ever. I've been talking a little about on the show Thule Society, which is one of the origins of kind of Aryan thought. White, pretty people who are blonde, who are thinking about like, there's this ancient land of like Norse gods where everyone is white and happy. It's this beautiful paradise that we just have to make happen by like doing horrible things to all of the people who aren't white and blonde. It's a really rough reckoning. And there's a lot of mysticism and fascism and really horrible things from history tied into those concepts. So there's a certain school of thought from many white people that like, hey, I'm something special. I'm God's chosen. That shows up in most religions. It showed up in Mormonism in my upbringing, where we were kind of openly taught back when I was a kid, even though they don't say it as much now, that if you are like a black or brown person, you probably are like a little bit less favored of God and you got a curse. And now you have to like make yourself white through like righteousness, like really shitty belief structures, just horrible, horrible things. We see a lot of that in our history as well. And one thing
that was very much the sentiment when like the British were colonizing India, right? Was they were like, oh, these people have like, they're brown on the outside, but we can make them white on the inside if we like bring our religion and our thinking to them, which of course was awful.
Yeah. Well, and then, I mean, this existent in Utah, where I live now, where there's Native Americans, but if we interbreed them enough, then their color will eventually leave. Like we can dominate the bloodstream with whiteness, right? Really, really icky, uncomfortable. There's stuff like this all over our history, I promise, in all countries around the world. But I want to open on a German program that existed in 1935 that was set up by that horrible, horrible human, Heinrich Himmler. Himmler founded a program in 1935, shortly after Hitler came to power, called the Lebensborn program, where they wanted to increase the population of racially pure Aryans. So they would sign up women from Norway that met certain measurement standards and have them breed with Nazi soldiers with the idea that they'd be raising a super race of Aryans. But there were also many, many, many children kidnapped from occupied territories who met those standards who were then raised in these things. So it's child abduction and racial breeding. And there are many, many thousands of people that exist on this planet who are descendants of those specific individuals. It's an active part of our culture. Captain America is the idea of the creation of a super soldier, right? There's a German scientist named Abraham Erskine, which is very much Albert Einstein. We'll talk about that another time, who is a defector from Germany who helps the Americans use a super soldier serum on weak or undesirable Aryans in order to create the perfect Aryan. We have future stories that show that they experimented on black people first. That's where the Isaiah Bradley story comes in. Steve Rogers then becomes like the epitome of the American dream, but also the epitome of the Aryan or Nazi ideal dream. But he's dressed in the American flag. The Red Skull later lives in the body of Captain America, the literal clone body of him for ages and ages. And we have things like the Dark Captain America out there, right? The Flag Smasher character who's part of the Secret Empire, for those of you, I think they call him Steve Rogers quite often. So it's the idea of let's take that Aryan ideal and turn it dark. So Steve fits in, and then we get Black Captain America as a direct correlation to that, and the commentary shifts widely when it's Sam Wilson. So before we even jump into to Masterman, which is where we'll start, we've got to recognize the German relationship with Captain America is more than just the idea that he stands for American values. He was like a German product who got defected from the war and then became do you see what I'm saying?
I always find one of the things I find so interesting about Captain America is that, it's more on a meta level, is that, he was created by a German defector and all that in the comics, but in real life, he was created by the children of Jewish immigrants who had an issue with the United States' non-interventionist policy and met, backlash because it was an unpopular opinion that America should fight against Nazis at the time. So, the character of Steve Rogers was created basically to be a slap in the face to this idea of the Aryan Nazi super soldier. And I've always found that such an interesting historical statement of because he was created before Pearl Harbor, before America was involved in the war or even wanted to be. And that's it. So Steve Rogers as the product of Jewish Americans is just
Yeah,
really
so
interesting.
we won't have time for that longer conversation. You could get a whole college degree in the idea that Jewish immigrants created both Captain America and Superman before that, and the idea of what that represents standing in the face of, Cap's first appearance is him punching Hitler on the cover, right? And that's before we knew about the camps. We very much want to open on this idea of the German envy of Cap because he was the German experiment taken and then given American ideals. So we also have to give a little bit of weight to the fact that most of our creators of our characters in the 1960s were veterans. Most, if not the children of veterans, right? When Marvel starts going absurd and crazy and diverse in the 70s, that's kind of the hippie and drugs era. But our early creators from Wally Wood to Stan Lee to Jack Kirby and on were all veterans. So a lot of our storylines, the commie threat, the red threat, the idea of what we're gonna punch, those are being redefined by people even now, 70 years later or 80 years later. 1970s is when Roy Thomas created the Invaders. He took a bunch of heroes from World War II, put together a modern, pretty fun, and kind of pretty queer book, if we're honest, with lots of great characters from Wizard to Blue Diamond to Red Raven to Bucky to Spitfire to there's a lot of really delicious characters, and they create a whole new rogues gallery, and we're weaving in superhero adventures to real world stuff. So I'm going to open up on Giant Size Invaders number one. We open on the image in this book of the invaders attacking a massive visage of Adolf Hitler. Then we shift to Captain America bantering as they take down the Nazis. Then Cap gets a visit from the FBI reminding him about his origins, when he entered Project Rebirth, experimented on the infirm in an attempt to create the perfect man, and only Steve Rogers was transformed before Erskine was killed by the Nazis. We jump back to World War II in the invader's life, and just before the bombing of Pearl Harbor, the Nazis, led by General Kriegshund, which translates to war dog, who speaks in such a cartoonish German accent that it's almost offensive, reveals that he's been working with Brain Drain. Some of you may recognize this character from Squirrel Girl comics. She reprograms a Nazi alien brain computer in the future. But this guy, he's a Nazi scientist whose brain got reprogrammed, and he's a brain in a jar now. And General Kriegshund wants to design the ultimate Overman or Ubermensch. He says things like, "Behold, der Masterman, awake, do you hear me?" "Yeah, I hear you, Herr Colonel. But Masterman moves when Masterman wills." We see a blonde, super strong guy with angry eyes and a strong jawline, just like kind of what if Steve Rogers might look like if he was a little bit, more like pro wrestler. He's in a deep blue skin tight suit, yellow boots, spikes on the bottom, yellow gloves, yellow belt, yellow collar, striations down the shoulders and arms, and a bright old red swastika on his chest, and another on the back. The branding is very clear. Swastikas in comics were very common in the 60s and 70s, like all fucking over the place. The narrator calls him a demonic blonde beast. He's super strong, and he's lashing out and just destroying shit, testing out his new powers. It's very Superman energy. "Achtung, Masterman," says Kriegshund. "Come to your senses at once. You were created to do our bidding, not to smash our laboratory." And Masterman says, "I was created to be myself. You are but human, and man is something to be surpassed, even as I have surpassed him. I, the Übermensch, the Masterman." And this man has so many speeches about how great he is coming up. We will not read all of them, but there are a lot. Just then, the Human Torch and Toro attack the castle. Masterman insults the weak Nazis around him. Toro calls him Fritz. "My name is not Fritz, but Masterman. Dwell on that in the few moments before I kill you both." They set the place on fire. The Nazis are dead. And Kriegshund and Masterman escape on a slide from the castle window that they had as a little escape route, just in case. Whee! Leaving the two Americans to rescue the captive scientist Murray Anderson. Later, Masterman rides a U-boat to an American naval base, and he bitch slaps Kriegshund across the face. Kriegshund wants to fire some torpedoes, but Masterman wants to do it himself. "The honor of destroying that battleship and all aboard must go to me and me alone, not some idiot U-boat commander. Behold, English dogs, I teach you the Übermensch, and his name is Masterman." And he turns out he's strong enough to shake off blows from the Submariner. "You'd best return to the water and lord over the oysters and crabs," he says. But Namor fights back. "Now, leather lad, what was it you said about oysters and crabs?" Oh, the banter is amazing. But soon Captain America, Bucky, Torch, and Toro attack. Masterman kicks Bucky in the face, punches Cap's shield, shakes off fire blasts all at the same time. He calls them swine and naive clowns. "I possess all of the power of Captain America ever had, and much more besides. You've merely hurried here to die." The Nazis warn that Masterman is running out of time. It turns out his power is temporary unless he gets more of the chemical that boosts him up. He shrinks back thus to his 98-pound weakling size. So he's literally Steve Rogers, but German. "This can't be happening to me," he says in a slightly higher voice, like he sucked some helium now, of course. "This is the way I was before. I was always weak, the weakest man in my local Nazi Bund. That's why Kriegshund sought me out. He said he wanted to duplicate the original Project Rebirth, and it worked, it worked. But now I'm like I was again, just like I was." Oh, poor little white boy. Cap punches him. Masterman trips on his own oversized uniform. He's like a kid dressed in clothes that are too big. He begs for mercy. Bucky punches him again. Kriegshund blows up the submarine, and the heroes present decide to band together as the Invaders. This is right, it's their first story where they announce themselves as a team. "Look out, Axis, here we come," is their tagline. And that, my friends, is the introduction of Masterman. master, man. Let
I think Captain America and Namor teaming up is very interesting because obviously Steve Rogers is like the most American and Namor is like very not American in like some ways and like ways that like Nazis like call him like mongrel and stuff. So he's sort of like racialized in an interesting way. Is interesting to see him in these stories.
Speaking of like both the like identity and national identity and things that both of you brought up, I think one of the most interesting things about Masterman is that he John Byrne retcons this later too for him to be German, but initially he's American. Like he's specifically a Nazi American Nazi sympathizer. He even comes up in like later issues.
Yeah, he
And
specifically mentions being part of a Bund, which is the
yeah.
American version of Nazism. I gave him the German accent here because of, but I'm really glad you brought this up.
Because John Byrne later says that he was sent to America by Hitler and all that, making him German. But initially, like we don't even get any indication that he can speak German for like the first four appearances he has. So I think it's really interesting that he's kind of like this homegrown Nazi equivalent of Captain America. Like he gets turned into Masterman in Virginia. And like it's like I think there's this really interesting thing of him being this foil to Captain America, but also like being of the same nationality in contrast to what Priya brought up about like Namor being like othered as this other, like as a citizen of another nation, of this other race, and like his interactions. I think he occupies this really interesting like counterpoint to Captain America in that way, that we kind of lose when they like change it that he was just like another German.
It almost makes like him seem more ridiculous because he is like so much like play acting as like a like true German Nazi, and it's like no, you're an American who's like fetishizing Nazis. Like it is like sad in a way where it's like you fully are not this.
Priya was texting me earlier about how much sympathy she has for Masterman in this issue. I'm just joking. He's a very hard character to like. He's fun. It's fun to punch a bad guy, right? But like, he's running around calling people mongrels while saying how special he is because he's white. And then the second you take his ego away, he's like, "But please have mercy on me, whiny little baby." I fucking hate him. I really hate this character, but it's
He's
in the right
very
way.
hateable, and but I like the way he's drawn as like very rectangular because it's like you feel like it would be really satisfying to punch him, and then you see Captain America and like everybody punch him, and you're like, yes, this is great.
And I'm just going to throw it out there at the beginning. There's a particular read on this character that he is gay and trying real hard to fight it. Like he's a terrible person no matter what, but watch for the queer read, especially as we go. We'll get there.
I think the most consistent term I would use to describe him is pathetic. Like he's just constantly like pathetic, and like he's got all this power and like he's so impotent with it and he can't do anything with it, and like he's rejected by everybody who like he wants to like. And when he gets later, when we jump to it, like when he and Warrior Woman are supposed to get married, it's like the idea had never even occurred to him, and then he becomes obsessed with it even though it doesn't seem like anything he wants.
He has like a very like incel like perspective on the marriage where he's like, oh yes, now that I am this like big buff guy, I'm owed a woman. And it's really gross. But like Hitler is also really gross in the story. And it's also like crazy that Hitler is a comic book character.
Like an extensively used comic book character, it turns out. I've read a lot of stories about Hitler in comics recently. Now, if we're capturing real life energy, Masterman is kind of giving me like Donald Trump Jr. If you guys just think about like the taste that gives you in your mouth, that's this character in real life. Like
The
if
way
we have a comparison.
I found myself thinking about him the whole time is that he just feels like one of those like kids who gets like radicalized by like Nazi YouTubers. Like that's
Absolutely.
what he is. He's just this like ineffectual, pathetic American like kid, like guy who just wants this power and wants this respect and gets told by these like figures that what he needs is that the Nazism is what's going to give him that and what's going to like make him that. And he dives in wholeheartedly.
Something to finally make me feel special. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
key. Okay, I'm gonna cover some of this quickly because this guy has more appearances than you'd think. He's very punchable. We see him in Marvel 2-in-1 Annual Number 1. Masterman is fighting Miss America, Blue Diamond, and the Wizard, and he steals the new cock. cockpit for the Nazis because they want to build a swastika-shaped airship that's like Power Rangers style, made up of different pieces. I need you to understand, listeners, you know me and you know how much I love a fucking stupid story, but I'm just doing one sentence on this one. But go read this story. It's fucking crazy. And wow, is it weird and weird and fun. Marvel 2-in-1 number 20 is a follow-up. We see Brain Drain and Sky Shark and U-Man and Master Man all working together versus the time traveling thing. And they're all in their little flying swastika with a bulletproof cockpit that Master Man has stolen. Together we shall rend you limb from grotesque limb as a warning to all others who would oppose the fatherland and der Fuhrer. And the thing says, couldn't you just send them a nasty postcard? Later, Master Man says to U-Man, you are a decadent swine, Murano. All that matters is the preservation of the master race. You are fortunate to have been named an honorary Aryan, as have our Oriental allies. Murano is Atlantean, but gross. We also get the only flag that shall ever wave over these decks, monster, is the swastika, and it shall wave proudly over the bodies of such grotesqueries as yourself. In fact, I suspect you are not, nor have you ever been an Aryan. And the thing is Jewish, by the way, although not canonically at this point, I don't think. The thing goes, Aryan Schmarian. The Liberty Legion shows up. Master Man misses the thing while getting punched out by Ms. America. Yay! And then he gets whizzed on by the wizard, and yep, that's how I chose to phrase that. And then he gets bitch slapped by Red Raven, who is super queer, and then the lights go out. Do we have thoughts on the swastika airship?
It's an incredible story.
It's crazy. So
Yeah.
stupid. We good there? All right, now we get to shift energy a little bit. We're gonna go back over to the Invaders. Invaders number 16. Master Man is back on the cover. Allied swine, you have traveled 1,000 miles only to die at the hand of Master Man. Captain America and Bucky are watching a film about the Invaders in their cover identities, and they notice a blonde man and his brunette girlfriend in the crowd in London. Cap and Bucky try to save the couple from a group of Nazis in red hoods. It turns out the woman is named Julia Koenig. She's a Nazi agent, and she helps the Nazis kidnap a soldier named Biljo White, who's a real-life comic book illustrator, by the way. Look him up. This is a real person. The Invaders review Biljo White's book, Major Victory. So it's a comic within a comic, like a play within a play, because they need information from it for their mission. Don't worry about it. They head to Hitler's base, the Berchtesgaden, which is a real place, where Master Man crashes the ship. You invader simpletons, what are you gaping at, you decadent pig? And he single-handedly captures all of the Invaders and puts them into cages. Captain and Bucky are chained to the wall. Namor is in a heated fishbowl. And the Human Torch and Toro are kept in underwater tanks. He calls all of them star-spangled swine, and then Hitler himself walks in. Now remember Julia Koenig, the woman we just met? In issue number 17, it's called Behold, the Wrath of Warrior Woman! The awesome origin of the most powerful, deadly Nazi nemesis of all. Priya, do you want to describe Warrior Woman for us? This is a look.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but she looks really cool, except for like the literal Nazi armband. But yeah, she has like dark hair. She has like a black swimsuit with like leather like belts and buckles and stuff. She is drawn like pretty consistently in her publications as like very like tall and muscular and with like broad shoulders and a square jaw, which is interesting to me. I think they're definitely going for like a like power thing and like a masculinity thing, which like I would be into if she wasn't a literal Nazi.
For all of
Oh,
you,
and she has a whip. That is
yes,
important
she has a whip and she's
too.
got swastikas on her armbands. Like, and
Yeah.
later she gets like swastika bra cups. Like, it's
Oh, does she? I
intense.
did not notice. I maybe didn't read that because I don't know how I wouldn't notice.
But she's giving very, for those of you that listen to the show regularly, last Pride Month, Sarah and Joe and I did an episode on Katrina Luisa Van Horn, the man killer, which is very much the modern interpretation of Warrior Woman in some ways. Well, they had debuted around the same time, actually, and they're both like in this feminism era. So we have a Warrior Woman. On the cover, she's 50 feet high. She's battling the five invaders as an arena of thousands watches, and there's swastikas fucking everywhere on the cover. Now, luckily, Hitler has a belt that translates his German into bad English. That's the story trope we get. And we learn that Master Man, by the way, in this issue, we learn his real name is Willy Lohmer, which is a literal playoff of the character Willy Lohmer from Death of a Salesman. Theoday, have you seen Death of a Salesman?
Yes, it's so perfect that they named this character after him. Just like this.
Wilhelm Lohmer. Do you we only have like the one sentence version, but can you tell us why this is funny?
Well, Death of a Salesman's whole deal is that it's like a play about the American dream, about like, and the main character, Willie Lohmer, is just the most pathetic guy who's just not accomplished anything he's ever wanted to do in his life. And like, it's
And he commits
so,
suicide at the end.
yeah,
Spoiler.
he commits suicide in the end because he thinks it's the only good thing he can ever do for his family. And like,
And
so.
we're not talking, it's not even a parody of the name. Like, this character's name is Willy Lohmer. Like, it's the same name, but they later change it to Wilhelm because of the German piece. It's
All my notes list him as Willy. I just refer to Masterman as Willy the whole time.
So
Right.
his
Did you know
strength.
he
would have changed his name to that though, because he's just like that kind of like gross like American who like is too into like Nazi stuff. I mean, any into Nazi stuff is too much, but. Yes, any amount. So his strength apparently in this issue is 10 times stronger. Hitler is annoyed. He's all flop sweat and raised fists. And by the way, by the end of the war, you guys, Hitler was like not doing great. We're talking like the last days of Elvis Presley, kind of not great. Like, he might die on a toilet one day, not great. He's injecting drugs and like not sleeping, and like he's a mess at this point. So we see him, you know, there's like a lot of footage of him toward the end of the war looking like this. He's just ranting, imbecile. Blumkopf, would you destroy all my beautiful Berchtesgaden in a meaningless display of brute strength? Because Masterman punched down a wall. You may be the ultimate product to date of Nazi science, but you are still under my command. Hitler hits Captain America with a rolled-up comic book and brags more about Nazis. And then Warrior Woman also hits the captive a comic book guy that they got. She hits him with a rolled-up comic book as well, and he's like, ugh! And it just can't hurt that much. I don't know. Anyway, she goes by like her nickname is Madame Ratzel or Frau Ratzel, Ratzel, despite the fact that her real name is Julia Koenig. And she also goes by Madame Mystery. She uses her whip to hypnotize the captive soldier into telling the truth. And then she gets some intel that she hopes will help with their new super soldier serum. But then she decides to use it on herself first. But first, she has to fight off a Hitler sympathizer. She says, Hauptmann is captain, by the way, in German. I've always loathed men, Herr Hauptmann, men with their smug air of superiority. But now I shall make a place in that world for myself. There's an explosion, and she gets the serum that they stole from the information from the comic book. Anyway, whatever the fuck. She's now like a superwoman. So she's super strong, super durable, and all buff and, you know, all that. So now she's the Nazi ideal for women who, by the way, Hitler just taught women should only belong in the kitchen, or like with the children or in the church. Like there's some famous quotes. Not they didn't like women very much. Remember
Yeah,
that.
that was interesting to me that she like becomes a warrior, but then in the comic it's emphasized like women should like just be like mothers and like raising children and stuff.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, that is an interesting
Yeah,
contradiction.
women could be spies, but they were not soldiers. Like there was some very strict rules about that.
Sorry, that's I think the thing I find most frustrating about Warrior Woman is that she's her whole character is meant to be this like, I mean, one, you can tell what kind of porn Roy Thomas was consuming at the time, but also like her whole thing is that she hates she's the embodiment of that like member of a minority population who joins a like fascist movement because they think it's going to give them power and then just gets like continuously shut down by the thing.
She's
It's like
like Mrs. Waterford in The Handmaid's Tale.
yeah, she thinks it's going to give her power, and instead she just gets shut down by all these men all the time.
And
Yeah,
there are
like
moments where you're almost like, oh, I feel bad for her. These men are being so sexist. And then you're like, oh, yeah, she's a literal Nazi.
I have a little sympathy for her, none for any of the men, but yeah, she's a terrible fucking person. So the invaders escape, Hitler runs away, Masterman fights, Warrior Woman enters with a huge hose to douse the flames of the human torch, and Toro, what the devil, says Toro. It's no creature of Christian superstition which has failed you, Americana, she says, but the successor to the proud Valkyries of Teutonic legend. I am Kriegerfrau, in your decadent tongue, Warrior Woman. The human torch says, I've never hit a woman before, but you're standing between us and the greatest mass murderer the world is ever likely to know. And remember, in the Marvel Universe, the Human Torch is the one that kills Adolf Hitler. A warrior woman gives a Sieg Heil to Hitler, beats the shit out of the invaders, and then stands with Hitler as he announces his plans to publicly execute the invaders in Berlin. We jump to issue 18. Warrior woman makes sure that Adolf Hitler knows that she is serving his cause, but that she created herself. She is a self-made woman. But Hitler's very first command when he sees her is that she will marry Masterman. Think what it will mean to the 1,000-year Reich when its two most splendid organs are married. Masterman says, but of course it's perfect. Our children will be the start of, and Warrior Woman replies, of nothing, oaf. There would be no marriage. Hitler, did you say, woman, that you are defying me? You know I am yours to command, mein Führer, but this is so unexpected. I must be alone to think. Adolf says, you see, just like all women, yeah, she must pretend the choice is hers. Oh, fuck you, man. Like, for so many reasons. But fuck you for that. We jump to 19 through 21. Hitler is ready to host the marriage of Masterman and Warrior Woman and execute the invaders at the same time. What a great Batman 60s super plot. I love it. But there are superheroes everywhere, and Julia really doesn't want to get married to this man, and Wilhelm really does. Like, it's almost comical. It's Nazi comedy because we have that all over our comic books. Hitler frees from the battle, and he's like, okay, but you're married now. That's it. Bye. And Warrior Woman battles Spitfire. Masterman fights the Submariner. Union Jack is here. Dynamite is here in the sexiest little gay costume. Masterman and Warrior Woman realize that Hitler's personal bomber plane has been taken over. Masterman says, someone has commandeered it and is hoping to help the Verdammt invaders escape. Come, Liebchen, we will destroy it together. And you know this woman does not want to be called Liebchen by this man. She says, I cannot. For some reason, my legs are not so strong as yours to leap so high. But kill those above, and perhaps I shall consider you to be my husband after all. So he leaps into the air and gets shot back down, and she runs away. The end. It's terrible, you guys, but it's really funny.
I hadn't thought of Masterman as gay at all, but it is striking how he doesn't have sexual interest in her until Hitler is like, you guys should get married. And then he's like, oh yeah, that would be great. I see that. But I really am in Roy Thomas hate mode here because it is having this Nazi character and then also kind of making her a caricature of a feminist and a lesbian in her man-hatingness, where I'm like, okay, pal, I don't know if this was the best idea for you to do.
I say this word with affection, but she's given real dyke energy, and Roy Thomas does not like a dyke.
And it she does have she definitely has more interiority than Masterman, and that is interesting. And I think it is interesting to see how she embraces Nazism, but then she hates when that is turned on her, where she's very I never thought they would do this to me. So I think that is an interesting thing for the story to explore a little bit.
I don't think we could really get away with doing this kind of story these days, even if we're portraying Hitler as a joke, which this story clearly is. It's just not politically correct to put him on the page. But this was written before I was born. It's written as a comedy. It's written as these are stupid fuckers, but it's funny. It really is funny in parts.
It's just, it takes away any real threat of Warrior Woman as a villain when she obeys a character who's written the way Hitler is written in this. Like, she's just kind of ineffectual, and a lot of it is just that Roy Thomas wanted to put a Nazi dominatrix in his comic and didn't really put any real further thought into it other than powerful woman is bad
So
and
this woman has very terrible ideals about anyone not white. I mean, that's part of her belief structure. She's got the swastika on her arm. But you almost have to wonder if she's just she's trying to make it in a man's world, and she thought that this would get her a place at the table. And then the first order is you're getting married to that fucker over there. And she, like the ending where she just runs away made me smile really huge.
there's a number of American politicians politicians you could probably point to and be like, this
Yeah.
woman reminds me of her a little
I
bit.
think you could make an interesting story out of these points. And I think Roy Thomas does not like quite have the dexterity to do that. But it really like gets on my nerve like how much she's like muscular and like masculine looking, where I'm like, what? I want to stan her. Because and I just like want there to be, because like she fights Spitfire and like that is fun, I think, to see like
Spitfire, everyone, is like the very well-to-do British woman. Think of like Mary from like Downton Abbey, but she's half vampire.
I didn't know about the half vampire part. That's interesting. But like it's fun to see like a good female hero like beat up like a bad one, but like Spitfire is like very like petite and curvy, and I'm like, I want there to be like a bigger, like muscular, like maybe more masculine like superhero woman who's like a good guy. Like I want
Yeah,
that.
and just to put a firm stance in place, Roy Thomas is not an authorized voice in the 1970s to be writing about topics like second wave feminism. It just doesn't belong
Yeah, he
ever.
did the Avengers issue with Valkyrie, right? Like the
The
Lady
Lady
Liberators or
Liberators.
whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I thought a bunch of times when I was reading this is how much I would love to see Warrior Woman get her butt kicked by Frenzy, by Joanna Cargill.
Oh, yes. I mean, I was also thinking like Frenzy wears similar clothing, but like it's cool when she does it.
Yeah, the other 7-foot dominatrix. I want to see her.
Yes.
Okay, she's back in Invaders 34. I'll cover this section quickly. Masterman versus Union Jack. Grovel at the feet of the true Übermensch, the triumph of German technology, and the vanquisher of both the Destroyer and the overrated Union Jack. He loses and escapes. He in 4041. It's the ending of the Invaders series. That's where the whole series ends. The Invaders are fighting Lady Lotus, who is a very problematic Asian stereotype, like dragon lady character. We just don't have time today, but she's assembled a group, including Baron Blood, who is the Nazi British vampire bat guy, Masterman, and Warrior Woman. So they all have alliterative names: Lady Lotus, Baron Blood, Masterman, Warrior Woman. And they are fighting the invaders. U-Man is here. Lady L Lotus forms a group called the Super Axis, which is crazy to me. Warrior Woman says, "My loyalties are only to der Führer and not some willowy-limbed female Japanese. And now this seductress who calls herself Lady Lotus shall." But Lady Lotus uses hypnosis to make Warrior Woman see her whip transform into a snake and attack her, so she is thus subdued. Then she does the same thing with
Which is like,
Masterman.
sorry, not to interrupt you, but I'm like, that's so like phallic and
Yep. Well,
insane. Sorry.
she had a hose in the previous one. She also hypnotizes Masterman. She makes him see monstrous versions of the invaders. The Super Axis attacks a nuclear base in Chicago. Masterman and Warrior Woman derail a train. Masterman says, "You see, my sweet, alone we have done much in the service of our Führer, but joined with you, man, and the vampire, we are invincible." And she replies, "Idiot! You babble like some member of an inferior race. In truth, we're no more than puppets dancing to the strings of that shapely Japanese." And in her private thoughts, she thinks of Lady Lotus, quote, "whimpering before my feet." So we're giving real dominatrix girl crush energy here. It's intense. But also, she's talking about inferior races, so you kind of like her, but also fuck her very much. The invaders attack. Miss America flies at Warrior Woman and Wizard too, and Warrior Woman's knocked out with a clud. And Miss America says, "Maybe it's about time these crumbs started paying their dues, Cap, and I'll start the collecting by introducing myself to Miss Deutschland of 1942. Love it. Namor takes out Masterman, who gets the sexiest little limp-wristed squat pose on a railroad track in this issue. Look it up. He is looking so gay. There is one more big fight scene at the county fair, and the bad guys again get defeated and arrested, and they walk into the police wagon. Masterman says, "After you, mine sweetheart." And Warrior Woman replies, "Do not even speak to me, you Dummkopf." There is a lot happening here.
The scene of them all getting brought into just an ordinary police wagon is so funny. Yeah, no, it's a weird one. Why are there never any every time they do one of these World War II stories and they have all these like Axis powers come to like super superpowers come together, there's never an Italian character.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's just because it was like 70s New York City and they didn't
There's
want to like.
one
I
wonder if that's it. there's one in the Red Skull's like group of old man exiles that live on that weird island. There is an Italian guy there.
And part of Agent Ax, because Agent Axis is three guys combined into one guy, and one's Japanese, one's German, and one's Italian. But other than that, like they really never have an Italian supervillain.
Priya, do you have any thoughts on the Lady Lotus Warrior Woman relationship?
Yes. So I need everyone to know that these issues on Marvel Unlimited like are prefaced with like their warning for like there's some really racist stuff here that it wasn't okay, but we are presenting it how it was like to be like historically accurate because Lady Lotus is just like so like such a like racist caricature and she's also like fully like extremely blatantly like lesbian. I was like shocked that like at how like blatant it is. Like she is like creeping on her like female like servant and stuff. But I'm also like she's like I just like want to like stan her, but I'm like I can't. She literally is like a Japanese imperialist.
Lady Lotus is the primary threat through a run of Avengers Spotlight and later Wonder Man comics in the 90s, as well as the villain in the Avengers 2 Wonder Man and the Beast limited series. She most recently showed up in the Marvels for all 12 issues. She was like a featured villain. This woman has over 40 appearances, certainly worthy of a Patreon sometime.
That Marvel
See,
series,
I
sorry.
would not have brought her back in this decade. I think that I'm astonished that they did that.
There's been some
But
care given by more modern writers,
yeah,
but
and
yes.
that Marvel series you mentioned does a lot to kind of completely like retcon who she is and what
It's
her like
excellent.
motivations are.
It's deep. That series is deep in continuity, but it's actually quite excellent. It's all over the place. Okay, let me turn it over to Theo for this next section of comics, because everything changes when we get to John Byrne's Namor.
John Byrne's Namor. I had actually not ever read this,
Oh
and
my
so
God.
I got to thank you for having, like a lot of comic fans, I have a complicated relationship with John Byrne.
The Namorita alone is worth the journey.
Oh yeah, I'm so glad I read this though, because I had so much fun with it. There's stuff in there that I wasn't thrilled about, but like I want to read more of this. But
I
like,
actually
because
thought
it,
this is some of like the best John Byrne art that I've seen before. I was
yeah.
surprised.
Remember that time that Namor took a full supervillain named the Griffin and turned him into his steed and rode him around for several issues? Yep, that happened.
The whole series is just like boardroom drama. Like,
Crazy.
CEO, all the villains are like, it's evil CEO twins, mutant CEO, the headhunter, and then like
Phoebe Mars and Headhunter are fucking great. There's
head.
it's a fun series, actually.
I'm obsessed with Headhunter,
I'm so
actually.
obsessed with Headhunter as well. Like her design is perfect. The like concept is perfect. Wow.
And she's a
We
mutant
touched on
too.
this series when we did the Hill 3 episode, like the plant monsters. But yeah, I really enjoy this one. But please continue, Theodate.
Headhunter being a mutant too, like makes her somebody that should get more focus.
Flag
She's
flagged
how
on
do you even
my
get on this?
flagged on my like, hey, do a Patreon list. I promise she's on there.
Because she's got like such a like gender non-conforming look. She's got the like crazy stuff. She's got powers going on. She's got the weirdest plans, and like she's so great. But we're not talking about Headhunter. I gotta focus. But no. So in Namor the Submariner 9, we get brought into Masterman reappearing and kidnapping the Jim Hammond, the original Human Torch, and Anne Raimond, who was Toro's wife, kidnaps them in California in the most nondescript look, which involves a literal leather strap with a buckle around his neck. That's his like in civilian disguise. It involves a full length leather trench coat and a neck belt. And we learn in 10, 11, and 12 so far that that the wall just came down in Germany. West Berlin and East Berlin are now reunited. And before the war, Baron Strucker had seen the writing on the wall and decided to set up cryogenic facilities to store away Masterman and Warrior Woman for like future attempts at taking over the world. He had Willie frozen in West Berlin, where Nazi doctors could continue to maintain the equipment and keep him like preserved.
All of the stories we've been reviewing for these characters thus far were set in World War II. So this is the one that brings them to the modern age, everyone.
Right. We learned that they'd been in cryogenic storage. So like that's why they're suddenly here in present day. But Warrior Woman had been stored away in a facility that ended up being East Berlin. So she was completely unsupervised during those decades, and the machines had like failures, and they're worried about bringing her back because they think she may have like undergone some like brain damage, and they want to kidnap the Human Torch to use his blood to help revive her for reasons. So they revive Master Man. He goes and kidnaps the Human Torch and Anne Raimond, who he kidnaps as incentive to get Jim to do what they want him to do. Turns out the guy behind this all is a German businessman who wants to kind of take over the newly reunified Germany, named Axel Nock. And because again, this is a boardroom drama, so all the villains have to be businessmen. So, and it turns out his plan is actually he wants to kind of remove Willy from the picture and just seduce Warrior Woman and replace be the new Master Man. So he sends Master Man to go fight Namor, and but sabotages it so that his powers fail him in the middle of the fight, and he ends up reduced back down to the 90-pound weakling. While Warrior Woman is revived, but she's not quite herself. She's like more passive because of the issues with the cryogenic storage. So she's like receptive to Axel Nock's seduction. It's
So, I mean, the
really
basic story
unfortunate.
is we have a young Nazi who has found the cryogenic tanks for the ancient soldiers, and he really wants to fuck Warrior Woman. He has a thing for this woman. And
He says, like, ever since he was a child, which is crazy.
I've wanted you forever. Oh my God, I'm thinking of that like really awful Nazi woman from The Boys that was like fucking Homelander. Oh, good Lord. This is Warrior. Oh, now I hate Warrior Woman. Now that anyway, please proceed.
Summer adventures are better with Minky Couture. From road trips to ball games, beach nights to backyard movies, Minky has you covered. Don't miss the Everywhere blanket, water resistant, ultra soft, and made for life on the go. Wherever summer takes you, bring comfort along. MinkyCouture.com, the original best blanket ever.
Yeah. So basically, to sum up, they had been put in cryogenic storage, and they were being brought back by Axel Nock because he was obsessed with Warrior Woman and wants to take over Germany and be the new Master Man. Part of the sabotage results in Master Man becoming just the 90-pound weakling Willy again. It's a really fun story. Like again, like this series is so much fun. But we get to see Warrior Woman get beat up by Namorita, which is great. But then Willy, who's super mad about his lost powers and being replaced by Nocked and the rejection from Julia and all that, decides to blow up the lab, and all the good guys escape. But the three bad guys, we don't find their bodies. They're left. It's a mystery as to what happened to Willy and Nocked and Julia. But that's more or less just what the story happened. It's a whole story that like establishes that they're all in the present day again.
And this is the story where Spitfire is like an old lady, but then she becomes like a 16-year-old girl again, which is like, John Byrne, you gotta stop doing this.
The fact that they refer to her as being returned to the prime of her life, and
And it's 16.
her physical prime is what they say, and her physical prime is specifically said to be a 16-year-old
I
girl.
mean, Bucky was 16 too.
So the annual doesn't actually have any real feature from them. It's just one of Namor's supporting cast reading like a computer file
Oh, it's
that
the
like,
top 10 list of worst foes.
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
that's right.
It's just Carrie Alexander or Cassie Alexander reading like about who they were. But Marvel Comics Presents 123 is a really, really weird story. I don't entirely know why they wrote it. It's so bizarre. But it's a story about immediate. So after the explosion that Willy sets off, he ends up in a hospital, admitted to a hospital as a John Doe covered in burns. And he's like dying in this hospital. And for some reason, there's a nurse in the hospital who's getting like psychic flashes of his memories and his like dying thoughts. And she like writes it all in a diary. So the whole story is this diary entry by this nurse who's the only person in the hospital who knows that this is Master Man who's dying in the bed. And we get flashbacks to his memories. We get like him fighting Cap. We learn that he had like an abusive mother, him being accepted and then rejected by the Red Skull and by Axel Nock stealing Julia away from him, all his failures, all his rejections. And then in his like dying moments, he starts feeling like guilt for all the death that he and the Nazis caused. And like he's just really pathetic. And the nurse basically takes pity on him because of how pathetic he is and declines to like reveal his identity to anyone else. It's never explained why she's getting these visions or what's happening. It's just this strange story about like this nurse experiencing all of Master Man's dying thoughts in this hospital. And they also specify that it's the Lower East Side of Berlin, which I thought was fun, going back to like the foil with Captain America because Captain America's from the Lower East Side of Manhattan. So they specify that Masterman dies in the Lower East Side of Berlin.
So he's dead. We'll talk about it. I gotta jump to Namor Annual 2 very quickly. There's a backup story called Namor's Top 10 Villains. This was a running gag in the annuals. There's an ally of Namor's just skirting through like the list. And I love every one of these characters. Number 10 in his top 10, Lyra, who I've profiled. Number 9, Dr. Dorcas, who's amazing. Number 8, Plant Man, who I've profiled. Number 7, Headhunter, who we just talked about loving. 6 is Masterman and Warrior Woman. And the reason this is so fucking funny is the image that is drawn for these characters in this little shot. Warrior Woman is in her like sexy thing, and like Masterman is like grabbing her shoulder from behind in like a leather coat. A Master Knight in front of her, or Axel Nacht, has his like hand on his stomach and he's like ready to kiss her. They look like they're about to have a threesome, and it's really funny that they chose those three images. Number 5 is Master Khan, who is a problematic Asian stereotypical character. 4 is Tiger Shark, who I love. 3 is Warlord Krang, who I love. 2 is Atuma, who I love. And number 1 are the twins Desmond and Phoebe Mars, who I could not talk about enough. This whole top 10 list is fucking great. It's fantastic.
John Byrne is never really a good writer, in my opinion, but it's like it's readable comics, I guess. And I'm just like
That's a
obsessed with
very low
Headhunter.
bar.
Nothing, I fully Headhunter just kind of like took over this series in my mind, and I'm just like, where is her solo?
Priya, take us to Captain America Annual 2001.
Yeah, this was a very strange story where Captain America is telling President George W. Bush about like a secret adventure that he had back in the day, like the Invaders days, where like they're like on a boat and Masterman, I think like the Red Skull isn't, or no, Baron Zemo, I think, is in charge, and like Masterman and Warrior Woman are there, and they're like, we are going to kidnap Namor so that we can take over Atlantis, but they mess that up and they kidnap Captain America instead, and they're like, well, maybe he knows where Atlantis is, so they kind of just like put him in jail on their submarine, and Captain America talks to this Russian spy who's also there, like being spies, I guess. And Captain America is like, America is great. You, the American government would never desert their spies and would never, they would totally like rescue them. And so then he like fights, he like breaks out of jail, I think, or they like take him out and he kind of like beats up the bad guys. And the invaders come up and they also beat up the bad guys and they save the Russian lady. And then we find out that in the present that she eventually moved to the US. Captain America like sends her like a thank you letter in the mail many years later because like this story had been totally forgotten by everybody, but he is remembering it.
And then we have kind of a banger of an issue. It's a dense read, but Captain America: The Medusa Effect. I really like this issue.
Surprisingly good. It's a bit longer. I think it was one of those like original graphic novels. It's like a story where it starts with Tesla being
Nikola Tesla, like
assassinated.
the famous
Nikola,
scientist.
yes. He like dies in his bed as like a Nazi steals these blueprints that he had for this weapon that would shoot planes out of the sky. And so Captain America and Bucky are there, but they can't stop the theft and they can't stop him from dying. And they're like, well, this is bad. But they find like a correspondence, a letter that he had received from a woman, and they're like, we need to track down this woman. Maybe she can help us. So they go to Spain, and it turns out that this woman is Baron Zemo's wife who faked her death to try and I didn't totally understand why she faked. There's a scene where she like kisses Captain America.
By the way,
It's
Roy
total.
Thomas is writing again, everyone, if you were unaware. It's 1994.
Yeah, he like, because it's a longer story, he kind of takes his time in the pacing and stuff, which I think is good. Bucky gets like a nice moment where he gets to kind of show off, which, or not like show off, but like we get to see him like be like a cool teen hero. And he like tries to help Zemo's son, but Zemo's son is like a Hitler youth and is terrible. And he like runs away, and they're like, well, that's great. But yeah, it was good.
And listeners, I really want you to understand like how deep this runs in our comics. Like, are you feeling a little overwhelmed? Because now we're going to jump to X-Men. In the 90s, in that incredible long Cable run, Masterman shows up. So jump to Cable 51, 52. Cable is with Irene Meriwether, and they are fighting the Hellfire Club in the Alps. Don't worry about it. It's a whole story. Cable's like got this like future, I'm the savior of mankind whole thing, and there's time travelers fucking all over the place. There's a long run story like under Ledron. This is an excellent run of Cable comics. I love this run. It's long too. Okay, so they meet in the Alps an old man named Wilhelm, who shows the heroes back to his ancestral estate, which is a beautiful castle with a mountain backdrop in the Alps. By the way, Hitler built a huge home in the Alps called the Eagle's Nest. I've been there. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in the whole fucking world, and it's like a Nazi stronghold that was built as like a vacation house up there. It's still there. Anyway, Wilhelm explains, "I acquired this house soon after the war. I found the surroundings to be a welcome change from the scarred battlefields of the rest of Europe. Living here helps me find peace of mind. For those of us who've experienced firsthand the horrors of war, finding that peace can be quite a challenge. Of course, we both know better than to confuse the search for inner peace with the desire to forget. No, we must never forget the things we've done, as much as we might wish to." And Wilhelm claims that he's a follower of Cable's like new religion. His little safe houses all over the world, and he's been helping promote the mutant messiah's cause around the world. Now, there are many stories of Nazi war criminals who evaded justice and went on to live long lives. We've talked about some of them on the show in the Red Skull Conversations. Cable is immediately suspicious of Wilhelm, reads his mind without authorization, and even comments on the ethics of it. But he ends up seeing an onrush of burning, horrible images of war, fights with the invaders. He realizes this is Masterman. He confronts him directly. "It's time, Wilhelm, time for you to face the consequences of your actions. Actions and atrocities committed years ago for which you've never had to answer. Well, no longer. It's time to face the truth of your identity. If you are indeed a believer, then you must know that nothing can remain hidden from me for very long. You can't outrun from your past, Wilhelm, or should I refer to you as Masterman, Nazi supercriminal, and Hitler's personal lapdog? You are one of the most wanted men alive. You did your damage during World War II and have scarcely been seen since. Everyone assumed you were dead. Turns out you've been hiding here, living off the riches plundered from the weak and helpless half a century ago. You've never been held accountable for the crimes you've committed, never had to answer for your sins, never been forced to look into the eyes of the children whose parents you murdered. So thank you, Cable, for taking this fucking seriously, finally, in a comic book." Masterman makes excuses. "In my youth, I was not the most well-educated of individuals. I was easily seduced by the Third Reich's promise of power and beauty. Like many others, I was a weak-minded fool. As a poor, pathetic boy, I was the proverbial ugly duckling. I gladly took part in the secret government experiments that led to my rebirth. I was no longer Wilhelm Lohmer. I was the Übermensch, Masterman. At my side was Kriegerfrau, warrior woman, my intended mate and object of my unrequited love. The war years were a glorious time, but our induction into the present era was less than successful. In a heat of battle, my powers failed me. My love spurned me. I chose to end my life. Even then, I met with failure. I didn't die. I was blown into the sewers of Berlin. What little of the super soldier serum that remained in my body kept me alive. However, my true age soon became apparent. My career as Masterman had ended. It was a blessing. I'm not proud of my past. The memories haunt me to this day. As long as I live, I will bear the weight of that burden. I am ashamed, living in my castle in the Alps by myself," I added that line. "My heart is as heavy as my sorrow is deep. I cannot begin to describe." And Cable says what I am thinking at this point. Enough! Do you truly believe the fact that you're sorry can erase the countless lives you've undoubtedly destroyed? Of course not! And I found no peace in death. And he claims that believing in Cable now has given him hope for a different kind of future. And then the Hellfire Club attacks, and they burn the castle down, and Wilhelm intercepts a shot meant for Cable. So later, as his home is burning, he's dying in the snow, giving his best, like, little fall of rain impression from Les Miserables. "This is how it should be, I suppose." And Cable cradles his head, try not to speak, lies still. "I was just beginning to feel as though I could erase the sins of my past. Let me tell you something. Always remember, your actions will define your legacy. The deeds that you will be remembered for have just begun. Consider them carefully, make them count. Be the hero we believe you to be. Julia." And he dies.
Not Julia. She doesn't even like him.
Evil buries Master Man and has a private little vigil for him. And wow, this fucking story.
So, as somebody who over-identifies with Rachel Summers, I have a lot of love for this Cable run because she's such a big character in this
I
series.
love it.
Yeah, it's a really good run. I'm not even that big a fan of Cable, and I still love this run. But this thing, it's so weird that they keep trying to give Master Man like a poetic send-off. And I think it's just because he's named Willie Lomer. I think the fact that he's like a refer his name is a reference to Death of a Salesman is the only reason they keep doing this, because I don't know why else we have multiple stories about him like feeling guilty as he dies.
I think the idea of like, here's this guy that used to be really scary, and now he's just this withered up old man living in hiding. The problem I have with it, it gives him so many words as he tries to explain why what he did was fine. We cut that in half, and I think the story is pretty fucking great, actually. But this is Cable, I don't know, running his business. Like he finds his follower and holds him accountable. I don't know. It's interesting.
I think it's just kind of bonkers to see Cable like interact with this character or like this side of the Marvel universe. It's just like not what I think of. But yeah, it's odd that they want to like give Master Man this interiority that he like really never had. Like he just kind of is there because he loves violence and like I think I do understand, especially I think like at this like point in time, like wanting to like think about like what do like Nazis who are now like old or like who grew old and are like have to like live with what they did, like what are those people thinking? Like I think that makes sense to like be curious about that.
Yeah, there's a
But
certain amount
yeah.
of, though, like, I don't know. He's like, I couldn't even kill myself, so I just am living here suffering. Like, I've suffered more than anyone. Like, there's no remorse. It's his own fucking comfort. Like, fuck this guy. Jumping to Weapon X Volume 2, Number 14. This is the Frank Thierry run. I hate this issue, but this is where we learn that Mr. Sinister was like a geneticist in the concentration camps. He also was present during a battle between Master Man and Namor. And by the way, both Apocalypse and Sinister have fucked with Namor's DNA in different stories. We don't talk about them much, but that has happened. We jump to Captain America Volume 5, Number 5. We see Master Man saving the Red Skull in an old conflict. We jump to Captain America a few issues later, 18 through 21, where Red Skull, and I love this run on comics too. This is Ed Brubaker's Captain America. It's excellent. He's living inside the body of Alexander Lucan. I'm not going to explain. And he recruits Max Lohmer, who's the nephew of Wilhelm Lohmer, in Hamburg. So this is like a modern Aryan, like little fucking punk. He's terrible, awful, like a little white supremacist German character, Max Lohmer. Max has been beating up immigrants, and now the Red Skull turns him into a new Master Man, and he has a little gang of racists, and Captain America, Union Jack, and Spitfire kick their asses. Master Man and Cap get to battle on a Zeppelin. He's got a bunch of rage issues. We get a new Master Man because that's what we needed. But you know, we gotta tell Captain America stories.
No, the Brubaker Captain America run is a classic for a reason. It's really
Excellent.
good.
This is the Winter Soldier run.
Yeah, it's very good. And I feel like updating Master Man to being like a modern day neo-Nazi who's beating up immigrants in the street, I think makes a lot of sense.
Okay, Theda, will you take us to the next appearance, which is your favorite, New Invaders?
Yes. So as I alluded to before, New Invaders is a comic I have read before. It's definitely not one of my favorite comic runs from 2004, and it's very, very post 9/11. It basically reimagines the Invaders as a modern day like secret operative group who are like overthrowing governments in the Middle East and things like that. The main like antagonist of it is a group called the Axis Mundi. They're run by Axel Nacht and Warrior Woman, who we mentioned, who from the Namor book. But they're have this army of synthetic like flying like minions called terrorists with a silent P, like pterodactyl, who they are using to like take over, to like affect oil producing Middle Eastern countries. John Walker is in charge.
Yeah,
It's very like.
this is Alan Jacobson and C.P. Smith. The art on this is really fun, and the thing I like most about this series is that it gives room for characters like Blazing Skull and Thin Man, who are not normally part of the ensemble. It's not your typical like Cap, Namor, Human Torch book. I think it's fun in that way, but yes, there's a lot of like, oh no, what were they thinking, moments in this one.
This is the run that makes it that establishes that like U-Man is like a serial rapist, and like they like genocide off the entire entire like secret society that gave Thin Man his powers and stuff like that. It's very 2004. It's very like that kind of edgy, like John Walker's got all these like lines that could be said directly by like the ultimate Captain America at the time. Like it's just very much he carries around a shield that has the American victims of terror attacks written on it. Like it's such a thing of its time. But anyways, to be on topic actually. So they're dealing with the Axis Mundi, who have like U-Man and Axelnacht and like Baroness Blood and all of them who are, and they get ambushed on their like headquarters ship, the invaders do. And Warrior Woman, this is probably, I think, in like straight success, this is probably Warrior Woman's most successful fight in like all of comics, because she beats John Walker to a bloody pulp, then turns on Union Jack, who she like nearly castrates before Axis Mundi is like forcefully teleported away. Like this is the most scary Warrior Woman has been depicted in any comic. She really just does not let up in the fight and is
She's
basically
not
ready to like
a gag here anymore.
no, she's actually treated like a real threat, and so I gotta give it that. And that takes place over the course of New Invaders 2 and 3, where the Axis Mundi are invading their ship and fighting the invaders. This is modern day invaders, by the way. I don't know if I specified that. It's all the characters kind of brought, like it's the modern day Union Jack and the DH Spitfire and the US agent John Walker. And after they get teleported away, though, we don't really see them again until the sixth issue, where they have approached Baron Zemo and Hydra to like be their ally and get rejected by Baron Zemo. And that's the extent of their appearance in that series, is one extended fight scene and then them getting rejected by Hydra.
We get more World War II flashbacks. Black Panther Volume 4, number 21, shows Master Man get his face burned in an invaders battle. And this is where we get to see Warrior Woman in her swastika bra. I'm going to call it a brostica.
The prostica.
I think that's the official terminology for the swastika bra. I wouldn't recommend buying one, anybody. In Captain America Volume 5, number 50, we get another flashback to them fighting Bucky in the war, and another one in Captain America Reborn, number 2. Then we get Reginald Hudlin's Black Panther. Captain America, Flags of Our Fathers limited series. We're just gonna skirt past it. There's a lot of violence against black people written by a black person, and it's World War II, but it just doesn't feel okay a lot of the time. Anyway, Master Man and Warrior Woman are invading Wakanda during the war, and there is gratuitous torture and violence used against Africans. There's an image where a black man is getting beaten and he drips blood on Warrior Woman, and then Master Man, to get revenge on the man who dripped blood on Warrior Woman, rips the man who bled in half. It's just rough. The story opens with a full page splash page of Gabe Jones, the black American soldier, saying, "I hate Nazis." So, I mean, there's that. They also team up with Armless Tiger Man, who is a very problematic character, Asian stereotype, and a guy named the White Gorilla. So, guys, I did an M'Baku the Man-Ape episode with Dotun Akande and Mireille Ayodele, and we didn't bring this guy up. There's an old World War II character called the White Gorilla. Anyway, tie him into Man-Ape, that's fine. Warrior Woman in this again goes phallic. She gets to ride a swastika missile and yell Yippee-ki-yay, and it explodes. And she says, "The big ones never last as long as they should." There are so many racial slurs. Azuri the Black Panther defeats them all with some germ warfare. The end. I did not enjoy rereading this series. It was deeply painful. Let's jump to Priya for Invaders Now, which is another modern Invaders interpretation.
Sorry, real quick. One thing I do want to say about this series, though, is what I do think is where it does kind of work is that I feel like the main conflict of the book is Gabe Jones being the Black American member of Nick Fury's Howling Commandos, being kind of stuck in the middle between like Captain America's idealism and Nick Fury's pragmatism, and how like neither of them have the perspective of what it means to be black and what it means to be part of this group. And Nick Fury wants him to use the fact that he's black to like kind of betray the Wakandans for the allies' good, for the goodwill of the allies. And Captain America's the idealist who believes that anything like that would be just as awful as like betraying them. And it's just the fact that it gives Gabe Jones so much like time to like debate what it means to be be a Black American, I think it, in this context, I think is what does work about that series. So there is a lot of problems there, but I do want to kind of defend it a little bit just.
If it had been written by a white writer, it would be unfucking
Yes,
acceptable. But
absolutely.
it's still, it just, I didn't like it. I understand, but I didn't like it. Before I said Invaders Now, but I actually meant now. Invaders Now.
This, it's a mini series. It's kind of rough, but it's
There's a theme
about
here, guys.
it takes place in modern day
Invaders Now
invaders.
is Christos Gage and Alex Ross writing with Kyle Reiss on pencils. It's from 2010.
Yeah, and Alex Ross does the covers too, which I was kind of shocked to see because it's not like I hadn't like heard of this series. I wouldn't have really expected his involvement in it. But it's a story where like the invaders, like there's something like there's like a subconscious force that's like bringing them together, like the ones who are still alive. And then they find out that something like that was like buried deep in their past has come back, which there was a biological weapon that had been turned against them, which was the Nazis had made this contagion that would transform people into basically like zombies. The idea was that they would spread the disease to like the human population. And so the invaders had no way of containing it and they had no way of curing it. So they just like killed all of the townspeople who had been infected, which they obviously felt really bad about, but they were like, well, we did that. And so now in the modern day, it turns out that one of the survivors of that who like had been experimented on but like had not contracted the infectious version of the disease, it would had just like deformed him a little bit, but he had not like been infected fully, so he didn't have to die. But he is like an old guy now and he's like really mad that the invaders killed his whole town. So he is planning, he like recreated the virus and he's planning to set it on the world again unless basically the invaders have to find a cure for it and also maybe give up their lives because this guy is also like a wizard and he's trying to bring back the town. The invaders do like with the help of like Reed Richards and other scientists, they find a way to cure this and they also are like preparing to like give their lives up to like right this wrong that they had committed many decades ago. But then like the ghosts of those townspeople show up and they're like, actually, you guys need to stay here because you're heroes and we are really disappointed in this guy because that was like a really awful thing to do. And so the like wizard guy feels really remorseful, but the invaders like don't die and they're like, we really shouldn't have swept this under the rug. Let's like make a monument to in honor of all of the people who died that day. So they make a memorial and it's kind of nice. And I think Warrior Woman is in this story because she was in the flashback. She was helping create the like bioweapon. So there's some punching of her, which is fun.
Her real name is listed in this series as Frieda Ratzel. Now we know it's Julia Koenig and she once played
Yeah.
Frau Ratzel, but her name is certainly not Frieda Ratzel because that would make it so much worse.
So actually, so I, sorry, I actually have, so you had texted before we had recorded this a while back about asking about Sudden Death, the like tabletop RPG
Oh,
thing.
yes.
And I did research into it, including tracking down the magazine that it was in. This is a, I just wanted to point out that her name is listed in this as Frieda Ratzel. So that comes from somewhere. So it came.
Give us a lead into this, though. Like, tell us what it is, how you researched it, etc.
Yeah, so if you look on Marvel Wiki and things like that in appearances, a lot of the time they will list something called Dragon in appearances. And I did research into this a while back because in the 80s, apparently, Marvel published a series of tabletop RPGs. One of them was involved, was module. I don't know the terms. I'm not, I don't know a lot of about tabletop RPGs, but they had modules that ran through a storyline about Kang sending heroes through time. And one of them was set in World War II and had an extension to it, or like expansion to it, in an issue of a magazine called Dragon. And I tracked down an issue of it because you had texted about it, curious what it was about. And I had previously read about it in like researching Wild West characters, because there's one about that too. And it had has in it, it has this whole expansion. There's a whole campaign and like stats and like a layout of the thing for Sudden Dawn that focuses on the Liberty Legion. And in it, it includes Nazi villain characters, including Agent Axis and Iron Cross and Master Man and Warrior Woman. And interestingly, Warrior Woman's name is listed as Frieda Rotzel in this rather
No, I
than Julia.
reject it. I reject her name being Frieda Rotzel. I hate it.
But yeah, it gives them all stats. So like they both, so Master Man has incredible fighting stats at 40, agility 10, good, strength remarkable 30, endurance incredible 40, reason poor 4,
Yeah.
intuition poor 4, psyche poor 4, whereas Warrior Woman is excellent at 20, agility 10, or fighting ability 20 excellent, agility 10 good, strength incredible 40, endurance incredible 40, reason good 10, intuition good 10, psyche typical 6. It gives them like abilities and all that, and it's I was reading through this beforehand, but this
If we
whole
have any
land.
listeners who were playing as Warrior Woman in the old Marvel RPG from the 80s, I would love to hear from you.
If you want this information, just let me know. I have it all here. If you want the official Marvel TRPG stats
There's
for
so
Liberty
many
Legion.
weird little pockets of Marvel lore out there. It's crazy. Let's jump over to Captain America 613 through 616. We touched on this in my Hatemonger Patreon episode. Yeah, guys, I did the Hatemonger earlier this month. We have not done Agent Axis or the Iron Cross, though. Theodate, tell us about this run.
This is a continuation of the Brubaker run. It like later on we come back. The Red Skull has been broken out of prison by Max Lohmer, the new Masterman. He doesn't really get much to do in this storyline. He's just kind of oh, sorry, the Red Skull's daughter, Sin. She goes by Red Skull in this story, so it's a little confusing. But Sin is broken out of prison by Masterman. He's joined her side and is basically just her minion throughout this. They capture Black Widow and Falcon. They strap them to bombs and put them in the Statue of Liberty. And the Bucky, Captain America, and Steve Rogers and
Guys,
Paul, like,
I'm a Captain America fan, but a little bit of these stories goes a long way sometimes.
yeah,
Do we need bombs in the Statue of Liberty?
Well, the big it does lead to the big like reveal where they finally beat Master Man, they beat Max and Sin, and the bombs go off, but they rescue everybody. And it turns out that she didn't want to destroy the Statue of Liberty. She just wanted to give her a black eye, so it just blows out one of her eyes. And that's like the final bit of this story. That's
Over in Avengers Volume 416, Steve Rogers and Sharon Carter beat the shit out of Max Lohmer and all of the old exile Nazi war criminals from Exile Island. And fuck all of them, but yay, the new Nazi and the old Nazis all get beat up together. Then in All New Invaders, number four, guys, there's a lot of Invaders series. Brief flashbacks to World War II, where we see Namor's Atlantean army beating up Master Man, Warrior Woman, and all of their evil friends. There's another 40s flashback in Invaders Volume 3-6. And then a pre Will you close us out on the United States of Captain America?
Yes, this was a very fun mini series about like these people, mostly young people across the US who had taken up the Captain America costuming and symbol for themselves. And they had created kind of a Captain America network among them. One of them was Aaron Fisher, who you might remember
Hi,
because he
Josh
was later.
Trujillo. We love you.
Yes, he was later in Avengers Academy. So the plot of this is that someone is trying to kill these various Captain Americas. And so Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson, they find out that it is Sin, the Red Skull's daughter, is doing this, and also a guy named Speed Demon, who I think was being mind controlled to do it. And then we find out that their boss is actually Warrior Woman, but she doesn't go by Warrior Woman now because she thinks that sounds juvenile. And she also has a different costume in this. It's like way less sexy, where it's just kind of like covers more skin and it looks more like an army uniform. But she is like, we want all the Americans to be afraid of the iconography of Captain America. We want them to hate it. We want to turn this country against itself. So I think she has a plan to release hate monger into the world too. But Thankfully, all the Captains America come together and they beat her up and they beat Sin up and they foil the plan. So it's all good. And it's a fun series, and
And
like each issue.
she calls herself Commander Krieger in this issue,
Yes.
not Warrior
Which
Woman.
is not
But
the right, yeah, that's not the right name, right?
no, she should be Commander Ratzel.
And she also has her like hypnosis powers in this again. That like plays a big part into it. She like uses her powers to like make Captain America, like Steve Rogers, like freak out over like the Captain America symbols. All the good guys save the day. And each issue has like a backup about like the new hero, which is very fun.
This is an interesting journey, and we're going to take a little bit of time for analysis here. I know this has been a longer episode in kind of an intense month of content. I know everyone, you may be sick of all the Nazi stories, but listen to how many there are. We have modern interpretation from some queer friends here on old World War II shit that keeps getting brought up in our comics, but it's also all around us in our lives as our rights are being stripped away, and it's crazy times. This is an interesting journey when you read some characters front to back like this. Master Man is canonically dead in the Cable stuff. Warrior Woman, we've seen die a few times, and then we've got that shitty nephew of Master Man that's running around at the same time. The Red Skull never dies. Baron Zemo never dies. The Hate Monger never dies. Arnim Zola never dies. It's in our face constantly all the time. If it's not them, it's their shit daughter, right? How are you guys feeling? I'm feeling a certain kind of way after this conversation. I'm smiling, but also it's just like, oh, you know?
Like there are so, like you said, like stories with like about like the Nazis and like World War II are just so prevalent. And I do think a lot of stories that use Nazis as villains are like in bad taste. But I also think it's important to like examine them and to think about like, okay, what does this say about like what the writers like thought about Nazis and how they conceptualized and like what they think is evil about them and like what they think evil is. And I think it's good to examine that. When like Sin showed up in United States of Captain America, I kind of was thinking about the parallels of her and Warrior Woman. And I was especially thinking of the version of her that is in Avengers Academy, where she's very much like a like trad wife type of person who like expresses her very like fascist views in like a more subtle way, and just like contrasting that with like Warrior Woman being like this exaggerated like dyke kind of character, and just thinking like, okay, which one of these is like what actual like Nazis look like nowadays? I think it is not a coincidence that like a like queer person wrote the version of Sin
We
who
love you,
is,
Anthony Oliveira.
yes, who is more of like a trad wife, because that is like what you're seeing nowadays. Nazi stuff, like it is so like there is so much of it, but like we do still have to talk about it, and we do still have to be thinking about these kinds of things.
I never want to see Master Man on the page again. Willie Lohmer,
Yeah.
burn in hell, not rest in peace.
Not rest in
And
peace.
Max Lohmer should only show up on the page when you are punching his fucking face off. This man should never be
Yeah.
given any kind of narrative ever again. However, I do think Warrior Woman has some interesting story potential as this kind of modern foil who takes the lead. I would only really be interested if she's trying to do it differently. I don't know, there's a reckoning for this character. It's unforgivable what she's done, but there's a certain amount of like, I'm interested in what's going on for her in a way, even though I don't appreciate at all what she stands for. Do you guys agree with that sentence, or is it much like Masterman where you're like, I never want to see this fucking character again?
I think it's hard to say because her most recent appearance is literally the first time she's ever been put in charge of anything. Like she's always just kind of a minion, and it's not until United States of Captain America where she's finally like shown any kind of like indication of what she wants to do, like what she actually wants to accomplish on her own. Because her initial story has her take the initiative to turn herself into a super soldier, and her most recent story has her take the initiative to try and create this like plan against the Captain America's, the Captain's America. But everything in between that, she doesn't, she's just there to like follow orders and punch things and like get mad at men around her. So we never really get any indication of like what she can do. And as Priya pointed out, like Sin manages to create this image of the trad wife, this very real image of what like this movement can look like. But Warrior Woman is a 7 foot tall, like muscular, more like masculine woman that doesn't really blend into those like ideals in the same way that Sin can. And that's I think the difference there is that there's an aspect that like what Sin can do as like a small skinny woman who like she's got a Red Skull face but she frequently hides it, and how she can blend into this ideal Nazi ideal that Warrior Woman can't. And we just don't have any indication of what you could do. I feel like there is stories you could do with Warrior Woman that examine these aspects of her that have just never been touched because she's just existed to be the dominatrix in the background.
There are so many characters I never want to fuck. Like Red Skull, fuck that guy. But there's some fun ones too. Arnim Zola is a blast. He's a terrible person, but he's fun. I think Warrior Woman is a little bit fun if we have to see this trope. She's one that I don't know. I'm a little fond of her, even though she's a terrible, terrible character, and I hate everything about her at the same time.
Similar to Theodate, where it's like, I think there is something interesting there. I think like my knee-jerk reaction to like this kind of Nazi stuff is just like, I don't want to do this again. But I think with her, like it could be interesting to like the hypocrisy of her being so mistreated by like these people and then like mistreating people anyway. It like you could do something interesting there, but I also like I don't know.
Brain Drain got redeemed.
This is true. I think that's a little different though, because he's like a
No, for sure.
brain. It's always crazy to me that he was a Nazi. I'm just like, that's our friend Brain Drain.
Okay, the parallel to 2025, we're talking about this all the time. I know we're struggling. I know we're finding joy where we can. Is there value for the two of you in doing this kind of weird research into your comics journey? When you realize how prevalent it is and how much room it takes up, it's jarring.
Yeah, I mean, I love history, but I find sometimes returning to World War II is just a well that's been drained dry. Like when people talk about history, they always talk about World War II. It's like it's synonymous with like the topic of history at this point. And it's especially, I mean, among Americans. I think that happens it reflects in the comics a lot too. And I don't know that it's serves as much purpose when we're watching things play out the way that they play out nowadays. I also love, as you know, I love going into the like pre-history Marvel stuff, the stuff that takes place outside the usual area. But when it's always Captain America and the Invaders, as much as I love Captain America and the Invaders, it feels like sometimes it's too easy to just have Nazis be the bad guy without examining why these ideas take hold and why these movements can become such big threats. And like when we're looking at things happening nowadays, this is a little bit backtracking a bit, but like as a trans woman, seeing a character like Warrior Woman presented as this, like the first Scary Movie has the same archetype of like the Nazi dominatrix who then they make transphobic jokes about with the broad shoulders and things like that. And that movie's been is to this day something people still watch. And it's just there's just an interesting aspect to where people talk about this kind of history without examining it in a way that really gives them understanding of it, I think. And going into it like this, if you go into it with the intention of understanding and learning and like seeing why characters like Master Man or Warrior Woman were created and what purpose they serve in a narrative, I think can be valuable in that overall understanding of why this is something we keep coming back to, both culturally and narratively and such. I don't know if that comes out to a cohesive point, but that
No,
was.
I think that's wonderful, and it's complicated, right? I'm making a lot of room in my life right now to research this shit and to talk about it with friends on the show, and I'm being very careful about who I invite for these conversations. But I'm thrilled that both of you joined me for this. The research is interesting, the conversation's interesting, but at the root of all, fuck, like, ugh, you know, like I fully understand. For me, the World War II stuff is also exhausting, but it's been kind of healing for me to research the history because it helps me understand a little bit about what's at stake. And it helps me like see that there's a precedent. method for this, right? Instead of everything just feeling so fucking heavy all the time, I can go, oh, look at this thing that happened 100 years ago, and now let's look at what's happening now. It's interesting.
I think Theodate said everything that was on my mind pretty much. It is a little frustrating, I think, to read these stories that like don't really meaningful a lot of them don't really meaningfully examine like why like what the Nazis did was wrong. They're just like, ooh, scary bad guys, and that is annoying. But like I think it is good to be looking at this stuff and being like maybe like trying to take away from it how what is a way that we can talk about Nazism that is more productive and useful in the time that we're in right now. And connected to the kind of fascism that we're dealing with right now. So yeah, I think there is a value in looking at this stuff, even if I kind of, I can't like physically threaten Roy Thomas on this show, but like I kind of feel frustrated by that man.
I know this was a serious month. I hope it's been informative and healing for everyone. We're going to keep the Red Skull conversations going on the show as well. Next month on Grey Malkin Lane, we're going to go so silly to counterbalance it all. It's going to be the trial of the Watcher at the end of the month. And because of that, we are doing an eyeball horror theme on the show. So all of the Patreon characters are eyeball themed. And so it's going to be a fun, silly, jump all over the place month on the show. We'll get silly on the main show as well. 2025 has been a wild journey. Thank you everybody for your ongoing support, and thank you to Theodate and Priya specifically for your friendship. I appreciate you both. Follow the show at graymalkin_lane on Instagram. Do we have any final thoughts from either of you, and where can people find you? Anything you want to plug for November 2025? Let's go Priya and then Theodate.
Nothing much to add. Thank you for inviting me for the episode. It was fun. You can find me.
Fun question mark.
Okay, fun is not quite right, but it was a good time. You can find me on Blue Sky at Letters of Priya, and that's about
I had a great time for what it is.
it.
I don't really know what any of my social medias are anymore because I don't really use any of them. I think I'm as Theodate Chase on a lot of things. Yeah, no, it was a great time. You really should have me and Priya back sometime to talk about Headhunter, because
Yes.
ping me. We have to find the right spot, but I love it. That'd be really fun. All right, everybody, thank you for listening. Take care of yourselves. We will see you all back here next week on the Grey Malkin Lane Patreon channel.
Summer adventures are better with Minky Couture. From road trips to ball games, beach nights to backyard movies, Minky has you covered. Don't miss the Everywhere blanket, water resistant, ultra soft, and made for life on the go. Wherever summer takes you, bring comfort along. MinkyCouture.com, the original best blanket ever.